Chapter 44. The Lesser Sadness. Rand's shirt clung to him with the sweat of effort, but he kept his coat on for protection from the wind gusting toward Kyrian. The sun had at least another hour to reach its noonday peak, yet already he felt as if he had run all morning and been beaten with a club at the finish. Wrapped in the void, he was only distantly aware of the weariness, dimly perceiving the ache in his arms and shoulders, in the small of his back, a throb around the tender scar in his side. That he was aware of them at all told the story. With the power in him, he could make out individual leaves on the trees at 100 paces. But whatever happened to him physically should have been as if it were happening to someone else. He had long since taken to drawing on Cydene through the Ungrial in his pocket, the stone carving of the fat little man. Even so, working the power was a strain now, weaving it at this distance of miles. But only the rancid threads streaking what he drew kept him from pulling more, from trying to pull it all to him. The power was that sweet, taint or no. After hours of channeling without rest, he was that tired. At the same time, he had to fight Cydene itself harder, to put more of his strength into keeping it from burning him to ash where he stood, from burning his mind to ash. It was ever more difficult to hold off Cydene's destruction, more difficult to resist the desire to draw more difficult to handle what he did draw. A nasty downward spiral, and hours to go before the battle was decided. Wiping sweat from his eyes, he gripped the platform's rough railing. He was near the brink, yet he was stronger than Egwene or Avienda. The Aiel woman was standing, peering off toward Kyrian and the storm clouds, occasionally bending to stare through the long looking glass. Egwene sat cross-legged, leaning back against an upright still covered in gray bark, her eyes closed. They both looked as worked out as he felt. Before he could do anything, not that he knew what, he had no skill at healing, Egwene's eyes opened, and she stood, exchanging a few quiet words with Avienda that the wind snatched away from even his Cydene-enhanced hearing. Then Avienda sat down in Egwene's place and let her head fall back against the upright. The black clouds around the city continued to stab lightning, but they were wild forks far more often than single lances now. So they were taking turns, giving each other a rest. It would have been nice to have someone do that with him, but he did not regret telling Asmodian to stay in his tent. He would not have trusted him to channel, especially not now. Who could say what he would have done when he saw Rand weakened as he was? Staggering slightly, Rand pulled his looking-glass around to study the hills outside the city. Life was certainly visible there now, and death. Wherever he looked, there was fighting. Aiel against Aiel, 1,000 here, 5,000 there, swarming over the treeless hills and too closely meshed for him to do anything. He could not find the column of horse and pike. 3 times he had seen them, once fighting twice their number of Aiel. He was certain they were still out there. Small hope that Melonreal had decided to obey his orders at this late juncture. Choosing the man just because he had the grace to be embarrassed by Wyrmann's behavior had been a mistake. But there had been little time to make a choice, and he had had to get rid of Wyrmann. Nothing to be done about it now. Maybe one of the Kyrianen could be put in command. If even his direct order would make the Tyrans follow a Kyrianen. A milling mass right at the city's high gray wall caught his eye. Tall, iron-bound gates stood open, Aiel battling horsemen and spearmen almost in the open, while folk tried to close the gates, tried and failed because of the press of bodies. Horses with empty saddles and armored men unmoving on the ground 0.5 mile from the gate marked where the sortie had been driven back. Arrows rained down from the walls in head-sized chunks of rubble, even occasional spears slashing down, with enough force to spit 2 men or 3, though he still could not see from where exactly. But the Aiel were going over their dead, ever closer to forcing their way in. A quick scan showed him 2 more columns of Aiel trotting toward the gates, perhaps 3,000 all told. He did not doubt that they were Culloden's as well. He was aware of grinding his teeth. If the Shido got inside Kyrian, he would never drive them north. He would have to dig them out street by street. The cost in lives would dwarf the number of those already dead, and the city itself would end a ruin like Ironrod, if not Tyen. Kyrianen and Shaido were mingled like ants in a bowl, but he had to do something. Taking a deep breath, he channeled. The two women had set the conditions, bringing the storm clouds. He did not need to be able to see their weavings to take advantage of them. Stark, silver-blue lightning struck into the Aiel once, twice, again, as fast as a man could clap. Rand jerked his head up, blinking away the burning lines that still seemed to cross his sight, and when he looked through the long tube again, Shaido lay like cut barley all around where the bolts had fallen. Men and horses thrashed on the ground closer to the gates, too, and some did not move at all. But the uninjured were dragging the injured, and the gates were beginning to close. How many won't make it back inside? How many of my own did I kill? The cold truth was that it did not matter. It had had to be done, and it was done. And well it was. Distantly he felt his knees wobbling. He would have to pace himself if he was to last the rest of the day. No more laying about him everywhere. He had to spot where he was particularly needed, where he could make a... The storm clouds were massed only over the city and the hills to the south, but that did not stop lightning from slashing out of the clear, cloudless sky above the tower, flashing down into the gathered maidens below with a deafening crack. Hair lifting with the tingle in the air, Rand stared. He could feel that bolt in another way, feel the weaving of Sidene that had made it. So Asmodian was tempted, even back in the tents. There was no time for thought, though. Like rapid beats on a giant drum, bolt followed bolt, marching through the maidens until the last struck the base of the tower in an explosion of splinters the size of arms and legs. As the tower slowly began to slant over, Rand threw himself at Egwene and Avienda. Somehow he managed to scoop them both into one arm, then wrap the other around an upright on what was now the upslope side of the platform. They stared at him wide-eyed, mouths coming open, but there was no more time for speaking than for thinking. The shattered log tower toppled, crashing through the branches of the trees. For an instant, he believed they might cushion the fall. With a snap, the upright he clung to broke off. The ground came up and knocked all the breath out of him, a heartbeat before the women came down on top of him. Darkness rolled in. He regained consciousness slowly. Hearing returned first. "Have dug us up like a boulder and sent us rolling downhill in the night." It was Avienda's voice, low, as if she spoke for her own ears. There was something moving on his face. "You have taken away what we are, what we were. You must give us something in return, something to be. We need you." The moving thing slowed, touched more softly. "I need you. Not for myself, you will understand. For Elaine. What is between her and me now is between her and me. But I will hand you to her. I will. If you die, I will carry your corpse to her. If you die..." His eyes popped open, and for a moment they stared at each other, almost nose to nose. Her hair was all in disarray, her headscarf gone, and a purple lump marred her cheek. She straightened jerkily, folding a damp cloth stained with blood, and began dabbing at his forehead with considerably more force than before. "I have no intention of dying," he told her, though in truth he was not sure of that at all. The Void and Sidene were gone, of course. Just thinking of losing them as he had made him shiver. It was pure luck that Sidene had not scoured his mind blank in that last instant. Just thinking of seizing the source again made him groan. Without the Void for buffer, he felt every ache, every bruise and scrape to the fullest. He was so tired he could have dropped off to sleep at once if he had not hurt so much. As well he did hurt then, because he surely could not sleep. Not for a long time yet. Sliding a hand beneath his coat, he touched his side, then surreptitiously wiped the blood off his fingers onto his shirt before bringing the hand out again. No wonder that a fall like that had broken open the half-healed, never-healed wound. He did not seem to be bleeding too badly, but if the maiden saw it, or Egwene, or even Avienda, he might have a fight to keep from being hauled off to Moraine for healing. He had too much to do yet for that. Being healed on top of everything else would act on him like a cudgel to the temple. And besides, there must be far worse hurt than what he suffered for her to deal with. Grimacing, suppressing another groan, he got to his feet with only a little help from Avienda, and promptly forgot about his injuries. Sulin sat on the ground nearby, with Egwene bandaging a bloody split in her scalp and muttering fiercely at herself because she did not know how to heal. But the white-haired maiden was not the only casualty, and not the worst by far. Everywhere, caught in sore-clad women were covering the dead with blankets and tending those who had merely been burned, if merely could be used for lightning burns. Except for Egwene's grumbling, the hilltop lay in near silence, even the injured women quiet, save for hoarse breathing. The log tower, all but unrecognizable now, had not spared the maidens in its fall, breaking arms and legs, tearing open gashes. He watched as a blanket was laid over the face of a maiden with red-gold hair, almost the shade of Elaine's, head twisted at an unnatural angle and glazed eyes staring. Jolene, one of those who first crossed the Dragon Wall to search for he who comes with the dawn. She had gone to the Stone of Tyr for him, and now she was dead for him. "Oh, you've done well at keeping the maidens from harm," he thought bitterly. "Very well indeed." He could still feel the lightning, or rather the residue of its making. Almost like the afterimage burned into his eyes earlier, he could trace the weave, though it was fading. To his surprise, it led west, not back toward the tents. Not Asmodian, then. Samael. He was sure of it. Samael had sent that attack in the Jangai. Samael was behind the pirates and the raids in Tyr. And Samael had done this. His lips peeled back in a snarl, and his voice was a harsh whisper. "Samael!" He did not realize he had taken a step until Avienda seized his arm. A moment later, Egwene had the other, the pair of them clinging to him as if they meant to root him to the spot. "Do not be a complete woolhead," Egwene said, giving a start at his glare but not letting go. She had redone the brown scarf around her head, but combing with her fingers had not put her hair back in order, and dust still covered her blouse and skirt. "Whoever did this, why do you think he waited so long, until you must be tired? Because if he missed killing you, and you went after him, you would be easy meat. You can barely stand on your own." Avienda was no readier to let go, meeting his stare with a flat one of her own. "You are needed here, Randolthor. Here, Karakarn. Does your honor lie with killing this man, or here with those you have brought to this land?" A young Aielman came running up through the maidens, Shufa around his shoulders, spears and buckler swinging easily. If he thought it odd to find two women holding Rand between them, he gave no hint of it. He eyed the shattered remnants of the tower and the dead and wounded with a slight curiosity, as though wondering how it might have happened and where the enemy dead might be. Grounding his spear points in front of Rand, he said, "I am Siren, of the Sharara sept of the Tomenel." "I see you, Siren," Rand replied just as formally, not easy with a pair of women holding him as if they thought he might run. "Han of the Tomenel sends word to the Karkarn. The clans to the east are moving toward each other, all four. He means to join with Derek, and he has sent to Aram to join them." Rand drew a measured breath and hoped the women thought his grimace was for the news. His side burned, and he could feel blood spreading slowly down his shirt. So there would be nothing to force Culloden north when the Shido broke. If they broke. They had given no evidence of it yet that he had seen. Why were the Miagoma and the others joining together? If they meant to come against him, they were only giving warning. But if they meant to come against him, Han and Derek and Aram would be outnumbered. And if the Shido held long enough, and the four clans broke through... Across the wooded hills he could see that it had begun to rain over the city, now that Egwene and Avienda were not holding the clouds. That would hamper both sides. Unless the women were in better shape than they looked, they might be unable to regain control from this distance. "Tell Han to do what he must to keep them off our backs." Young as he was about Rand's age, come to that, Siren raised an eyebrow in surprise. Of course. Han would not do differently, and Siren knew it. He waited only long enough to make certain that Rand had no further message. Then he was off and running downhill just as fast as he had come. No doubt he hoped to get back without missing any more of the fighting than he had to. For that matter, it might already have begun there to the east. "I need someone to fetch Jaden," Rand said as soon as Siren had dashed off. If he tried to walk that far, he really would need the women to hold him up. The two of them looked nothing alike, yet they managed practically identical suspicion. Those frowns must have been one of the things every girl was taught by her mother. "I'm not going after Samael. Not yet. I have to get closer to the city, though." He nodded to the fallen tower. That was the only gesture available with them hanging on. Master Torvir might be able to salvage the lenses from the looking glasses, but there were not three logs of the tower unbroken. No more observing everything from on high today. Egwene was plainly uncertain, but Avienda barely paused before asking a young maiden to go to the Gaishine. To fetch mist, too, which he had not counted on. Egwene began brushing herself off, muttering under her breath at the dust, and Avienda had found an ivory comb and another scarf somewhere. Despite the fall, somehow they already looked considerably less disheveled than he. Weariness still marked their faces, but as long as they could channel at all, they would be useful. That gave him pause. Did he ever think of anyone now except as how useful they were? He should be able to keep them as safe as they had been atop the tower. Not that the tower had been very safe, as it turned out. But this time he would manage things better. Sulan stood as he approached, a pale cap of Algoda bandage covering the top of her head, her hair a white fringe below. "I'm moving nearer the city," he told her, "where I can see what is happening, and maybe do something about it. Everyone who is injured is to remain here, along with enough others to protect them if need be. Make it a strong guard, Sulan. I only need a handful with me, and it's poor repayment for the honor the maidens have shown me if I let their wounded be slaughtered." Well, that should hold the greater part of them away from the fighting. He himself would have to stay clear to keep the rest out, but the way he felt, that would be no burden. "I want you to stay here, and..."
"I am not one of the injured," she said stiffly.
And he hesitated, then nodded slowly. "Very well." He had no doubt that her injury was serious, but neither did he doubt that she was tough. And if she stayed, he might be stuck with someone like Anila leading his guard. Being treated like a brother was nowhere near as annoying as being treated like a son, and he was in no mood to put up with the latter. "But I trust you to see that no one follows who is injured, Sulan. I will have to keep moving. I can't afford anyone who will slow me down or must be left behind." She nodded so quickly that he was convinced she would make any maiden with as much as a scratch remain behind. Except herself, of course. This was one time he felt no guilt over using someone. The maidens had chosen to carry the spear, but they had chosen to follow him, too. Maybe follow was not precisely the word, considering some of the things they did, but that did not change anything to his mind. He would not, he could not, order a woman to her death, and that was that. In truth, he had expected some sort of protest before this. He was only grateful that it had not come. "I must be more subtle than I think." Two pale-robed Gaishine arrived, leading Jaden and Mist, and behind them followed a crowd of others, arms full of bandages and ointments, and over their shoulders, bulging water bags in layers, under the direction of Soralia and a dozen other wise ones whom he had met. At most, he thought he might know the names of half. Soralia was very definitely in charge, and she quickly had Gaishine and other wise ones alike circulating among the maidens, tending wounds. She eyed Rand and Egwene and Avienda, frowning thoughtfully and pursing her thin lips, obviously thinking that all three looked tossed about enough to need their injuries bathed. That look was enough to send Egwene scrambling into the gray's saddle with a smile and a nod for the aged wise one, though if Aiel had been more familiar with riding, Soralia would have realized that Egwene's awkward stiffness was not usual.
and it was a measure of Avienda's condition that she let Egwene pull her up behind the saddle without the slightest protest. She smiled at Soralia, too. Gritting his teeth, Rand pulled himself into his own saddle in one smooth motion. Aching muscles' protests were buried under an avalanche of pain in his side, as though he had been stabbed anew, and it took a full minute before he could breathe again. But he let none of it show. Egwene reined Miss close to Jaden, dear enough to whisper, "If you cannot mount a horse any better than that, Randall Thor, maybe you should forget about riding at all for a while." Avienda wore one of those blank Aiel expressions, but her eyes were intent on his face. "I noticed you mounting, too," he said quietly. "Maybe you ought to stay here and help Soralia until you feel better." That shut her up, even if it did tighten her mouth sourly. Avienda gave Soralia another smile. The old wise one was still watching. Rand booted the dapple to a trot downhill. Every step sent a jolt up his side that had him breathing through his teeth. But he had ground to cover, and he could not do it at a walk. Besides, Soralia's stare had been starting to get on his nerves. Mist joined Jaden before he was 50 paces down the overgrown slope, and another 50 brought Sulin and a stream of maidens, some running to position themselves ahead. More than he had hoped for, but it should not matter. What he had to do would not involve getting very close to the fighting. They could stay back in safety with him. Seizing Saidin was an effort in and of itself, even through the Angreal, and the sheer weight of it seemed to press down on him greater than ever, the taint stronger. At least the void shielded him from his own pain. Somewhat, anyway. And if Samael tried to play games with him again... He quickened Jaden's pace. Whatever Samael did, he still had his own job to do. Rain dripped from the brim of Matt's hat, and periodically he had to lower his looking glass and wipe off the end of the tube. The downpour had slackened in the last hour, but the sparse branches overhead gave no shelter at all. His coat was long since soaked, and Pips's ears were down. The horse stood, as if not intending to move, however Matt thumped his heels. He did not know for sure what time of day it was. Somewhere in the middle of the afternoon, he thought, but the dark clouds had not thinned along with the rain, and they hid the sun where he was. On the other hand, it felt very much like 3 or 4 days since he had ridden down to warn the Tyrans. He was still not sure why he had done that. It was southward that he peered, and a way out that he looked for. A way out for 3,000 men. Easily that many survived yet, though they had no idea what he was up to. They believed he was hunting another fight for them. But 3 so far were 3 too many by his book. He thought he could have escaped on his own now, so long as he kept his eyes open and his wits about him. 3,000 men, however, drew eyes wherever they moved, and they did not move quickly, what with more than half their number afoot. That was why he was on this light-forsaken hilltop, and why the Tyrans and Kyrianen were all jammed into the long, narrow hollow between this hill and the next. If he simply made a break for it... Jamming the looking-glass back to his eye, he glared south at sparsely wooded hills. Here and there were thickets, some fairly large, but most of the land was scrub or grass even here. He had worked back to the east, using every fold in the ground that would hide a mouse, bringing the column with him out of the treeless terrain and into some proper cover. Out of those bloody lightning strikes and fireballs. He was not sure whether it was worse when they came, or when the earth simply erupted in a roar for no apparent reason. All that effort to find that the battle was shifting with him. He could not seem to get out of the center of the thing. Where's my bloody luck now that I really need it? He was a pea-brained fool for staying. Just because he had managed to keep the others alive this long did not mean he could keep it up. Soon or late, the dice would come up the Dark One's eyes. They're the flaming soldiers. I should leave them to it and ride. But he kept searching, scanning the wooded peaks and ridges. They gave cover for Culloden's Aiel as well as for him, but here and there he could make them out. Not all were involved in pitched battles, but every last group was larger than his. Every one was between him and safety to the south, and he had no way to tell who was who until it might be too late. The Aiel themselves seemed to know at a glance, but that did him no good. Some mile or more off, a few hundred cotton-sore-clad shapes, running eight abreast and heading east, topped a rise where half a dozen Leatherleaf made a poor excuse for a copse. Before the lead runners could start down the other side, a lightning bolt flashed down into their midst, splashing men and earth like a stone thrown into a pond. Pips did not even quiver as the clap reached Matt. The gelding had grown accustomed to closer strikes than that. Some of the fallen men picked themselves up, limping, and immediately joined those who had kept their feet in a hasty check of the unmoving. No more than a dozen were hauled across shoulders before they all dashed down from the height, back the way they had come. None paused to look at the crater. Matt had watched them learn that lesson. Waiting only invited a second silvery lance from the clouds. In moments, they were out of sight, except for the dead. He swung the looking glass east. There was a look of sunlight a few miles that way. The log tower should have been visible, poking above the trees, but he had not been able to find it in some time. Maybe he was looking in the wrong places. It did not matter. The lightning had to be Rand's work, and all the rest of it as well. If I can get far enough that way, he would be right back where he started. Even if it was not the pull of Tavirin drawing him back, he would have a hard time leaving again once Moraine found out. And there was Melindra to consider. He had never heard of a woman who would not take it askance when a man tried to walk out of her life without letting her know. As he panned the looking glass slowly, hunting the tower, a slope covered in spaced leather leaf and paper bark abruptly went up in flames. Every tree became a torch at the same instant. Slowly he lowered the brass-bound tube. He hardly required it to see the fire, and the thick gray smoke already making a thick plume into the sky. He did not need signs to recognize channeling when he saw it. Not like that. Had Rand finally tipped over the edge of madness? Or maybe Avienda had finally had enough of being forced to stay around him. Never upset a woman who could channel. That was a rule Matt seldom managed to follow, but he did try. Save the smart mouth for somebody besides yourself, he thought sourly. He was just trying not to think about the third alternative. If Rand had not finally gone mad, and Avienda or Egwene or one of the wise ones had not decided to be rid of him, then someone else was taking a hand in the day's business. He could add two twos without getting five. Samael. So much for trying that way out. It was no way out of anything. Blood and bloody ashes. What has happened to my... A fallen branch cracked under someone's foot behind him. He reacted without thinking, knees more than reins pulling Pips in a tight circle, sword-bladed spear whipping across from the pommel of his saddle. Estion almost dropped his helmet, his eyes going wide, as the short blade stopped a breath short of splitting his head for him. The rain had slicked his hair down into his face. Also afoot, Nalicion grinned, partly startled and partly amused at the other young tyrant's discomfort. Square-faced and blocky, Nalicion was the second since Melanriel to lead the Tyran cavalry. Talmanis and Derrid were there as well, a pace behind as usual, and blank-faced beneath their bell-shaped helmets, also as usual. The four had left their horses farther back in the trees. "There are Aiel coming straight for us, Matt," Nalicion said as Matt raised the raven-marked spear upright. "The light burn my soul if there's one less than 5,000. He grinned at that, too. "I don't think they know we're here waiting for them." Estion nodded once. "They are keeping to the valleys and hollows, hiding from..." He glanced at the clouds and shivered. He was not the only one to be uneasy about what might come out of the sky. The other three looked up, too. "Anyway, it's plain they mean to go through where Derrid's men are." There was actually a touch of respect in his voice when he mentioned the pikes. Grudging, true, Not very strong, but it was difficult to look down on someone after they had saved your neck a few times. They will be on top of us before they see us.
Wonderful, Matt breathed. That is just bloody wonderful.
He meant it for sarcasm, yet Nalision and Estion missed the flavor, of course. They looked eager. But Darad wore as much expression on his scarred face as a rock, and Talmanis lifted an eyebrow at Matt just a fraction, shook his head a hair. That pair knew fighting. The first encounter with the Shido had been an even wager at best, one Matt would never have taken if not forced. That all the lightning had shaken the Aiel enough to turn it into a rout changed nothing. Twice more today they had seen action, when Matt discovered himself in a choice of whether to catch or be caught, and neither had come out nearly as well as the Tyrants believed. One had been a draw, but only because he had been able to lose the Shido after they pulled back to regroup. At least they had not come again while he was getting everyone away through the twisting hill valleys. He suspected they had found something else to occupy them. Maybe more of that lightning or fireballs or the light knew what. He knew very well what had allowed them to escape their last fight with skins mostly whole. Another bunch of Aiel plowing into the rear of those fighting him, just in time to keep the pikes from being overrun. The Shido had decided to withdraw to the north, and the others, he still did not know who, had swung off to the west, leaving him in possession of the field. Nalision and Estion considered it a clear victory. Darad and Talmanis knew better.
"How long?" Matt asked.
It was Talmanis who answered.
"Half an hour, perhaps a little more, if grace favors us."
The Tyrans looked doubtful. They still did not seem to realize how quickly Aiel could move. Matt had no such illusions. He had already studied the surrounding terrain. But he looked at it again and sighed. There was a very good view from this hill, and the only halfway decent stand of trees within half a mile was right where he sat his saddle. The rest was scrub brush, little as much as waist high, dotted with leather leaf and paper bark and the occasional oak. Those Aiel would surely send scouts up here for a look, and there was no chance at all that even the horsemen could get out of sight before they did. The pikes would be right out in the open. He knew what had to be done. It was catch or be caught again. But he did not have to like it. He only took a glance, but before he could open his mouth, Darad said,
"My scouts tell me Cooladin himself is with this lot. At least their leader has his arms bare and shows marks such as the Lord Dragon is said to carry."
Matt grunted. Cooladin, and heading east. If there was any way to step aside, the fellow would run headlong into Rand. That might even be what he was after. Matt realized that he was smoldering, and it had nothing to do with Cooladin wanting to kill Rand. The Shido chief, or whatever the man was, might remember Matt vaguely as somebody hanging about Rand, but Cooladin was the reason he was stuck out here in the middle of a battle, trying to stay alive, wondering whether any minute it was going to turn into a personal fight between Rand and Samael. The kind of fight that might kill everything within 2 or 3 miles.
That's if I don't get a spear through the brisket first.
And no more choice about it than had a goose hanging outside the kitchen door. None of it would be so without Cooladin. A pity no one had killed the man years ago. He certainly gave excuses enough. Aiel seldom let anger show, and when they did, it was cold and tight. Cooladin, on the other hand, seemed to flare up 2 or 3 times a day, losing his head in a fiery rage as quick as snap a straw. A miracle he was still alive, and the Dark One's own luck.
"Nalision," Matt said angrily, "swing your Tyrans wide to the north and come in on these fellows from behind. We will be holding their attention, so you ride hard and come down like a barn collapsing."
So he has the Dark One's luck, does he? Blood and ashes, but I hope mine is back in.
"Talmanis, you do the same to the south. Move, both of you. We've little time and it's wasting."
The two Tyrans bowed hastily and dashed for their horses, clapping on their helmets. Talmanis's bow was more formal.
"Grace, favor your sword, Matt. Or perhaps I should say your spear."
Then he was gone, too. Looking up at Matt as the three vanished down the hill, Darrad slashed rain from his eyes with a finger.
"So you will stay with the Pikes this time. You must not let your anger at this Cooliden overcome you. A battle is no place to try fighting a duel."
Matt barely stopped from gaping.
"A duel? Him? With Cooliden?"
Was that why Darrad thought he was staying with the Foot? He had chosen it because it was safer to be behind the Pikes. That was his reason, the whole reason.
"Not to worry. I can hold myself in rein."
And he had thought Darrad the most sensible of the whole lot. The Kyrianan merely nodded.
"I thought that you could. You have seen Pikes pushed before and faced a charge or two, I vow. Talmanis gives praises when there are two moons. Yet I heard him say aloud that he would follow wherever you led. Someday I would like to hear your story, Anderman. But you are young. Under the light, I mean no disrespect. And young men have hot blood."
"This rain will keep it cool if nothing else does."
"Blood and ashes. Were they all mad?"
Talmanis was praising him? He wondered what they would say if they found out he was only a gambler following bits of memory from men dead 1,000 years and more. They would be drawing lots for first chance to spit him like a pig. The lords especially.
No one liked being made to look a fool, but nobles seemed to like it least of all, perhaps because they so often managed it on their own. Well, one way or another, he meant to be miles away when that discovery came.
"Bloody Cooliden. I'd like to shove my spear down his throat."
Healing pips, he started for the opposite slope, where the Foot waited below. Darrad climbed into his own saddle and swung in beside him, nodding as Matt spun out his plan. The bowmen on the slopes, where they could cover the flanks, but lying down, hidden in the brush until the last minute. One man on the crest to signal the Aiel in sight, and the Pikes to step off as soon as he did, marching straight out toward the approaching enemy. "As soon as we can see the Shido, we'll retreat just as fast as we can, almost back to the gap between these two hills, then turn to face them."
"They will think we wanted to run, realized we could not, and turned at bay like a bear to the hounds. Seeing us less than half their number and fighting only because we must, they should think to roll over us. Can we but hold their attention until the horse comes down on them from behind?"
The Kyrianan actually grinned.
"It is using the Aiel's own tactics against them."
"We had better hold their bloody attention."
Matt's tone was as dry as he was wet. "To make sure we do, to make sure they don't start putting loops around our flanks, I want a cry raised as soon as you stop the retreat. Protect the Lord Dragon." This time, Darrad laughed aloud. That should bring the Shido in right enough, especially if Cooliden was leading. If Cooliden really was leading, if he thought Rand was with the Pikes, if the Pikes could hold until the horse arrived. A lot of ifs. Matt could hear those dice rolling in his head again. This was the biggest gamble he had ever taken in his life. He wondered how long it was until nightfall. A man should be able to make his way out in the night. He wished those dice would get out of his head or else fall, so he knew what they showed. Scowling into the rain, he booted Pips on down the hillside. Jaden stopped on a crest where a dozen trees made a thin topknot, and Rand hunched slightly against the pane in his side. The crescent moon, riding high, cast a pale light, yet even to his sidine amplified vision, anything more than 100 paces distant was featureless shadow. Night swallowed the surrounding hills whole, and he was only intermittently aware of Sulin hovering nearby and maidens all around him. But then he could not seem to keep his eyes more than half open. They felt grainy, and he thought the gnawing pain in his side might be all that held him awake. He did not think of it often. Thought was not only distant now, it was slow. Was it twice Samael had attempted his life today, or 3 times? More? It seemed that he should be able to remember how often someone had tried to kill him. No, not to kill, to bait.
Are you still so jealous of me, Tel'Janin? When did I ever slight you, or give you one finger less than your due?
Swaying, Rand scrubbed a hand through his hair. There had been something odd about that thought, but he could not recall what.
Samael? No. He could deal with him when... if... no matter. Later. Today, Samael was only a distraction from what was important. He might even be gone.
Vaguely, it seemed that there had been no attack after... after what? He recalled countering Samael's last move with something particularly nasty, but he could not pull the memory to the surface. Not balefire.
Mustn't use that. Threatens the fabric of the pattern.
Not even for Ilyena?
I would burn the world and use my soul for tinder to hear her laugh again.
He was drifting again, away from what was important. However long the sun had gone down, it had sunk on fighting, lengthening shadows gradually overwhelming the golden red light, the men killing and dying. Now, vagrant winds still brought distant shouts and screams. Because of Culloden?
True. But at the heart of it, because of himself.
For a moment he could not remember his name.
Randall Thor, he said aloud and shivered, though his coat was damp with sweat.
For an instant, that name had sounded strange to him.
I am Randall Thor, and I need to see.
He had not eaten since morning, but then the taint on Saidin drove hunger away. The void quivered constantly, and he hung on to the true source by his fingernails. It was like riding a bull driven mad by redwort, or swimming naked in a river of fire, churned to rapids by jagged boulders of ice. Yet when he was not on the brink of being gored or battered or drowned, it seemed that Saidin was the only strength left in him. Saidin was there, filing at the edges of him, trying to erode or corrode his mind, but ready to be used. With a jerky nod, he channeled, and something burned high in the sky. Something... a ball of bubbling blue flame that banished shadows in harsh light. Hills mounded up all around, trees black in the stark illumination. Nothing moved. A faint sound came to him on a gust of wind. Cheering, perhaps, or singing. Or maybe he was imagining things. It was so tiny, he could well have been, and it died with the wind. Suddenly he became aware of the maidens around him, hundreds of them. Some, including Sulin, were staring at him, but many had their eyes squeezed shut. It took him a moment to realize they were trying to preserve night vision. He frowned, searching. Egwene and Avienda were no longer there. Another long moment passed before he remembered to loose the weave of his channeling and let blackness reclaim the night. A deep blackness to his eyes now.
Where are they?
He was vaguely irritated when he had to say who he meant, and just as vaguely aware that he had no reason for it.
They went to Moraine Sedai and the Wise Ones at dusk, Karakhan, Sulin replied, moving closer to Jiaden.
Her short white hair shone in the moonlight.
No, her head was bandaged.
How could he have forgotten?
A good 2 hours gone. They know that flesh is not stone. Even the strongest legs can run only so far.
Rand frowned. Legs? They had been riding mist. The woman was making no sense.
I have to find them. They are with Moraine Sedai and the Wise Ones, Karkarn, she said slowly.
He thought she was frowning, too, but it was hard to be sure.
Not them, he muttered. I have to find my people. They're still out there, Sulin.
Why was the stallion not moving?
Can you hear them? Out there in the night, still fighting. I need to help them.
Of course. He had to dig his heels into the dapple's ribs, but when he did, Jiaden only shifted sideways, with Sulin holding on to his bridle. He did not remember that she had been holding the bridle.
The wise ones must speak to you now, Randall Thor.
Her voice had changed, but he was too weary to say how.
Can't it wait?
He must have missed the runner with the message.
I must find them, Sulan.
And Nyla seemed to spring up on the other side of the stallion's head.
You have found your people, Randall Thor. The wise ones are waiting for you, Sulan added.
She and Anila turned Jaten without waiting on his agreement. Maidens crowded in for some reason as they started along a winding way down the side of the hill, faces reflecting moonlight as they stared up at him, so close their shoulders brushed the horse's flanks.
Whatever they want, he grumbled, they had best be quick.
There was no need for them to be leading the Dapple, but it was too much effort to make a fuss over it. He twisted to look back, grunting at the pain in his side. The crest was already swallowed in the night.
I have a lot to do yet. I need to find...
Culloden, Samael? The men who were fighting and dying for him.
I need to find them.
He was so tired, but he could not sleep yet. Lamps on poles lit the Wise One's encampment, and small fires, where kettles of water were hauled away and replaced by white-robed men and women as soon as they began boiling. Gaishine scurried everywhere, and Wise Ones as well, tending the wounded whose numbers swelled the camp. Moiraine was moving slowly down the long lines of those who could not stand, only rarely pausing to lay hands on an Aiel, who then thrashed in the throes of being healed. She swayed whenever she straightened, and Lan hovered behind her, as if wanting to hold her up, or expecting to have to. Sulan exchanged words with Adeline and Anila, too low for Rand to make out, and the younger women ran to speak to the Aes Sedai. Despite the numbers of wounded, not all of the Wise Ones were looking after them. Inside a pavilion off to one side, perhaps 20 sat in a circle listening to one standing in the center. When she sat, another took her place. Gaishine knelt around the outside of the pavilion, but none of the Wise Ones appeared to have any interest in wine or anything except what they were hearing. Rand thought the speaker was Amis. To his surprise, Asmodian was also helping out with the wounded, the water bag hanging from each shoulder, looking decidedly odd with his dark velvet coat and white lace. Straightening from giving a drink to a man stripped to the waist except for bandages, he saw Rand and hesitated. After a moment, he handed the water bags to one of the Gaishine and wove his way through the maidens toward Rand. They ignored him. They all seemed to be watching Adeline and Anila speaking to Moiraine, or else eyeing Rand. And his face was tight by the time he had to pause for the solid circle of Fardarai's Mai around Jaten. They were slow in parting, and did so just enough to let him through to Rand's stirrup.
I was sure you must be safe. I was sure.
From his tone of voice, he had been no such thing. When Rand did not speak, Asmodian shrugged uncomfortably.
Moraine insisted I carry water. A forceful woman to not allow the Lord Dragon's bard to...
Trailing off, he licked his lips quickly.
What happened?
Samael, Rand said, but not in answer.
He was just speaking the thoughts that drifted through the void.
I remember when he was first named Destroyer of Hope. After he betrayed the gates of Havan... and carried the shadow down into the Rorn Madoi and the heart of Satel. Hope did seem to die that day. Kulan Kuhan wept.
What is wrong?
Asmodian's face had gone as white as Sulan's hair. He only shook his head mutely. Rand peered at the pavilion. Whoever was speaking now, he did not know her.
Is that why they are waiting for me? Then I should join them.
They will not welcome you yet, Lan said, appearing beside Asmodian, who jumped. Or any man.
Rand had not heard or seen the warder approach either, but he only turned his head. Even that seemed an effort. It seemed to be someone else's head.
They meet with the wise ones from the Miagoma, the Kodara, the Shianda, and the Darain.
The clans are coming to me, Rand said flatly.
but they had waited long enough to make today bloodier. It never happened like that in the stories.
So it seems. But the four chiefs will not meet you until the wise ones have made their arrangements, Lan added dryly. Come, Moraine can tell you more than I of it.
Rand shook his head. Done is done. I can hear details later. If Han doesn't need to keep them from our backs any longer, then I need him. Sulan, send a runner. Han.
It is done, Rand, the warder said insistently. All of it. Only a few Shido remain south of the city. Thousands have been taken prisoner, and most of the rest are crossing the Galen. Word would have been sent to you an hour ago had anyone known where you were. You've kept moving. Come and let Moraine tell you.
Done. We've won?
You have won. Completely.
Rand peered at the men being bandaged, the patient lines awaiting bandages, and those leaving with them. The rows that lay almost unmoving. Moraine was still making her way along those, pausing wearily here and there to heal. Only a few of the wounded would be here, of course. They would have been coming as they could throughout the day, leaving as and when they could. If they could. None of the dead would be here.
Only a battle lost is sadder than a battle won.
He seemed to remember saying that before, long ago. Perhaps he had read it. No. There were too many living in his responsibility for him to worry over the dead.
But how many faces will I know like Jolene's? I will never forget Elena, not if all the world burns.
Frowning, he raised a hand to his head. Those thoughts had seemed to come on top of one another, from different places. He was so tired he could hardly think, but he needed to. Needed thoughts that did not slide by, almost beyond his reach. He released the source and the void and convulsed as Sidene almost drove him under in that moment of retreat. He barely had time to realize his mistake. With the power gone, exhaustion and pain crashed down on him. He was aware of faces turned up to him as he toppled from his saddle, mouths moving, hands reaching to grab him, cushion his fall.
Moraine!
Lan shouted, voice hollow in Rand's ears.
He is bleeding badly.
Sulan had his head cradled in her arms.
Hold on, Randall Thor, she said urgently. Hold on.
Asmodian said nothing, but his face was bleak, and Rand felt a trickle of Sidene flowing into him from the man. Darkness came.